Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. 2019 is shaping up like a year of macro tech story themes. There's the mounting tech lash as politicians stake their claims as to how best regulate an out-of-control tech sector, as they see it, at least. There's public pushback on subsidies via tax credits for tech companies who want to expand their footprints and promise far-off jobs, looking your way, Amazon. And then there's the money, a potential wave of initial public offerings. That's when a company you already thought was public starts issuing shares and trades on the NASDAQ or the Dow, looking your way, Lyft and Uber. It's anticipated we could get up to 16 IPOs with market values ranging from $1 billion to more than $10 billion, unicorns and decacorns, if you're into that lingo. This week, we have a 30-year investing expert with us from Ernst & Young, branded with the cooler-sounding EY. He specializes in IPO prep.
There's this notion of what we call the mega rounds. These are private companies that raise over $100 million in a round. In 2018, that was happening about one almost every working day of the year. To put that in some context, 2 years earlier, there might have only been 20 of those in an entire year. So that's $100 million financing by a private company. We used to talk about IPOs as being $100 million financing.
Right.
They're doing this as private companies.
That's EY's IPO expert, Joe Muscat. We also get into a discussion about worldwide innovation trends.
What we're seeing in sort of corporate America and corporations globally is they're looking for innovation engines. They're looking internally first, but then when they sort of reach the max on what they can do internally, they're looking externally for innovation. And so they're investing and using capital to support these companies to get a look at what's changing. So if you sort of go on the premise that entrepreneurs fundamentally see the opportunity for disruption, then that's what companies are seeking. They're looking for a way to get into that, you know, disruptive engine and bring it into their own organization before they too get disrupted.
And towards the end of the interview, to celebrate the new season of Showtime's hit Billions, we dig into that show's take on venture capital. Kind of. Here we go. Let's start with what you do every day and like what your world is like so we can kind of get a context there.
I'm the managing partner of our office in Redwood Shores. We're focused on serving growth companies. That means venture capital, private equity backed, recent public companies from an accounting, tax, transactions, and consulting perspective.
So we're talking like Series A through IPO plus?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, cool. So people have stacked their team, made their pitch, have investment. And this is the stuff you study.
That's right. And they're growing exponentially in many cases.
That's a dynamic place to be. How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing it almost 30 years.
That's awesome. So the VC guy we usually have in here has been in for 30 years, too. So there's some institutional knowledge that you're sharing with us at EY. So I appreciate that.
We might know each other.
Yeah. You guys probably go back. Who knows? I was doing some research to talk with you. This is our first time. And I noticed that Q2 2018, I'm going to start back a little bit, okay, because we're coming up on Q2 2019, and we're going to pull that forward. But 2018 Q2 was a big quarter for IPOs from what I could tell. Did that stand out for you? And did you recall thinking anything like that was interesting or I expected more?
You know, so 2018 was a really interesting year. There were the high points you were describing, and then there was a couple of other periods of time where things got pretty volatile and people took a step back. But what's been interesting is, and the way we work with entrepreneurs is, you know, we help them get ready, which means that activity that you saw, the public sees in Q2 of 18, which really was a high watermark, you know, we'd been sort of helping companies get ready for 6, 8, 12 months in advance of that.
Okay.
So that they were really ready to be public companies at that point in time.
Okay, because as I see here on MarketWatch, it was 60 companies that went public in that quarter. Is that
amazing,
a lot?
Amazing volume, yeah. I mean, that is a lot of companies. I mean, we haven't seen that kind of volume in almost a decade.
All right, let's move forward to Q3. I was looking at your Q3 numbers, and what stood out for me there last year was the international numbers. That seemed to be a lot, too. I know that this may be not your swing zone, but just anecdotally speaking, is this a phenomenon that's emanating out from the U.S. market?
Well, I think what we're seeing is international investors are interested not only in companies in the United States, which was kind of the phenomena of a decade or a decade and a half ago, but they're actually interested in their home markets as well. So you see markets in Asia, you see markets in Europe really expanding and embracing local companies and providing capital in a very unique way. It's really impressive to see sort of global capital markets and the flow of funds to innovation for the most part.
Again, anecdotally speaking, because I don't remember whose house it came out of, but I see that EM is actually a growth area moving forward, regardless of what happens with the Fed, et cetera, here.
I think there's going to be growth globally as it relates to innovative companies. I think, you know, people are looking for capital if you're an innovative company, and there are investors looking to put it to work kind of in sort of these next generation companies.
You mentioned in the previous answer, 10 or decade and a half, I believe is what you said. And it was a little more navel gazing, U.S. focused kind of investing. When you see the expansion going out, are you seeing the expansion of categories? And the reason I ask is because Q2 was a lot of small cap, mid cap health stuff going on last year.
Yeah, so there's a variety of different things going on. So
are you playing whack-a-mole is what I'm asking?
Well, no, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing the private equity and venture capital investments that, you know, have been happening for about the last decade or so really sort of starting to come to market. We're talking about the unicorns coming to market right now. You know, the decacorns, these are the companies with over $10 billion private company valuations talking about coming to market here in 2019. So I think we've got a really interesting period of time. But I think what we're also seeing is this sort of phenomena globally, which is, you know, entrepreneurs really sort of pitching their wares to investors a little bit earlier than where they would have. And you're seeing sort of categories of companies wherever innovation exists. And innovation is truly a global phenomena. You know, it's not limited to Silicon Valley as much as we might have branded it here.
Right.
It really has expanded globally into China and India. All over the world.
So coming into 2019, the headlines were Uber, Lyft, and a couple of others, right? Then we had the government shutdown, 35 days starting in late December, moving through. Let's just talk about that as a headwind for the IPO market, or am I overstating that?
You know, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, is such an important piece of sort of regulating who comes to market. And they were effectively closed for the better part of that period of time. And so things were on hold. And so we saw very little activity so far through the first quarter of 2019.
So are we late stage in the VC cycle? You mentioned that a little bit. A lot of these companies you saw popping last year, you've been working on for years. So the ones that are popping in 2019, are once these guys pop, what's behind it?
Well, so a couple of different phenomena going on in the sort of venture capital investing world. So there's this notion of what we call the mega rounds. These are private companies that raise over $100 million in a round. In 2018, that was happening about one almost every working day of the year. To put that in some context, 2 years earlier, there might have only been 20 of those in an entire year. So that's $100 million financing by a private company. We used to talk about IPOs as being $100 million financing.
Right.
They're doing this as private companies. So there's a flow of capital that's going to innovation that is really unprecedented. And sometimes you have to step back to really appreciate the volume of activity and the volume of dollars going towards innovation.
Yeah, I wish I had like a sound effect when you gave me that number, because that was just like a ooga, you know, the popping eyeballs. I don't know if you can talk about specific firms. I know I mentioned Uber and Lyft, which I think are pretty known. I think they're filed. But let's talk about what you see in the data and what you at EY are expecting for 2019 from where you sit.
Yeah, we think 2019 has all the foundations of being a really great IPO year. You know, you've seen about 150 or so unicorns. These are private companies with valuations in excess of $1 billion.
It's insane.
You know, all those companies are eventually going to come to market. Will they all come in 2019? Probably not, okay. But some meaningful volume will. I think there were about 40 that came to market in 2018 globally. And so we see that trend as sort of leading 2019. But there's a lot of, you know, innovative mid-market companies mm-hmm. that are also setting up to get to the market. And then companies are constantly re-evaluating their corporate structures, right? We're seeing the breakup of the conglomerates and people saying, you know what, we could be smaller, more nimble. We need to be more innovative. And so they, too, are looking at different ways to structure organizationally. And as a result, sort of offering new opportunities to investors.
So there's a lot of plates that have to spin here for you to know when to come out.
I mean, it is all about being ready. I mean, that's what we talk to our clients about. I mean, IPO windows open and close. I mean, that metaphor is something that people have talked about for a long time. And so what we talk to CEOs and boards and CFOs about is, you know, make your company ready to be public.
I don't want to ask for your secret sauce, but I must ask, are there macroeconomic indicators that you, through your 30 years of experience, know to look for when a window might open? Like, is it low interest rate areas right now and high demand of capital and no volatility, something like that?
That's a pretty good formula.
Okay, yeah, I imagine that is for anything, right? That's definitely the Goldilocks moment right there.
You know, but let me add one thing, which is to say, I think companies can go public almost in any market, right? I mean, they may be better received. There may be more hoopla around a particular transaction in that kind of Goldilocks market that you were talking about a moment ago. But, you know, these unicorns probably can get public anytime they want. I mean, they've built enough capital. They've built enough following. Their core business is strong enough that generally public market investors will welcome them at any time. But people like to use the momentum of the market.
Right.
You hate to go against the market, but I would say, you know, there's this class of private companies that are quite unique and probably could access the market when it's right for them.
And wouldn't that also be maybe a strategic management of expectations to come out when the market is not hot? And if you don't pop on that first day of trading, maybe you get the better headlines. It's kind of like how Steve Jobs used to always undersell his quarterlies, you know.
There's been more than a few IPOs of pretty notable companies that came out in difficult market conditions,
right,
and the companies did just fine.
I think one of them was Google, if I remember right. Let's say we have a big year like you're predicting. What happens with the release of that capital? I mean, is there backfill? Is that half of your job is backfilling for that?
Yeah, so one of the things you'll see is the investors in those companies, the venture capitalists for the most part, are looking to take that capital and, in effect, recycle it. I mean, it goes back to their limited partners, but fundamentally, those same limited partners reinvest that with those same venture capitalists to look for the next generation of innovation. So I think we'll continue to see that trend continue for quite a period of time.
Metaphorically, in my mind, I'm thinking about a balloon that's about to overfill, and we're going to have a pop of all this capital. Payment to LP, got it. Reinvestment, got it. How long does that usually take for that balloon to refill to the point where we're at right now?
Yeah, so I think you do go through these 3, 5, 7 year cycles. 3 to 7 is probably a good period of time where it's about company maturation for what the public market investor wants to invest in, right? How stable is the company? How, you know, what level of innovation are they at? You know, what's their long-term growth prospects? Do they have the ability to predict their long-term success? If you've got those attributes, you've got the right team, you have a visibility on where your business is going, and the market conditions for your industry are sort of dynamic, you've got the right characteristics to be funded, whether it be by venture capitalists or by the public market investor.
I realize you have to be broad-based in knowledge, and it's very broad, very deep, which is institutional again. Are there areas in the VC market right now that kind of interest you, categories? Is it fintech? Is it health tech? I always hear fintech is going to pop, and all I see are basically insurance companies.
Well, what's interesting, I think, about technology is it's not just technology for its own sake, but rather it's the innovation of technology and the enablement of technology in financial services. That's fintech, right? The enablement of technology and how it's transforming things that are happening in healthcare. That's really exciting at the moment, right? The role of technology as it relates to energy is transformative.
Okay.
So I think it's this notion of where is technology changing industries? You know, how has it changed the taxicab industry? I mean, radically, right? How we transportation in general, how we drive ourselves, technology is fundamentally changing. So that's the theme. That's the underlying theme that we talk about at EY all the time as we're working with, you know, entrepreneurs. It's, you know, what is the enabling technology? How big is that market? And what are you going to disrupt in the process?
Right. Let's stay with disruption for a minute here. You have a 30-year career of watching disruption happen. A quote I like to remember is, the future is scary, but it's only scary once. Is the level of disruption we've seen with what's about to happen in 2019, what we all anticipate is happening and it is in your report and data, is the level of disruption similar to what you've seen in the past?
It's just different.
It's
the same but different, right? It's picking on new opportunities. It's all about what these entrepreneurs, we like to say we advise, guide, and recognize entrepreneurs. And, you know, in that process of what the entrepreneur is doing is they're looking for market opportunities and fundamentally transforming how those industries behave. And so they're looking for disintermediation fundamentally.
Okay.
And that's happened, you know, as it related to computers, that's happened in software, you know, and now it's happening in transportation, like we were talking about a moment ago. So, you know, what's next? I mean, that's what's happening in great universities by great entrepreneurs all over the world. I mean, and that's why I've been doing this for 30 years, is it's super exciting to see what's next.
That's one of the reasons I do why I do, too, because I come in with a blank page every day and get to leave with a finished product. You get to do kind of the same thing by examining these companies and helping them. And it's a cool gig. You have a really cool gig.
It is a lot of fun. You know, so we do this one really fun program. It's called the Entrepreneur of the Year program. And we've been doing that now for almost 30 years as well. And And each spring, we look for great entrepreneurs who have great stories to tell. And we have this platform where they get to compete to be the entrepreneur of the year in their market, geography, country, globally. And so, you know, that's the process we're in right now. And it's fun to hear those stories and be able to celebrate that entrepreneurship, what they're doing, what their companies are doing.
Right on. Can I look for an invite to that this spring?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I like to do that on the mic.
You got it.
You heard it on the record right there, right?
Confirmed.
I am smart enough to know when I don't know something. You guys always have such deep data. What would you like to pull out? I'm just going to open mic you. Is there something that really popped in the most recent reports or anything that anecdotally you would like to highlight?
Well, so there's a couple different dimensions. So as it relates to venture capital investing, one of the trends that I think is really interesting to look at is the role of corporate investors in supporting companies, particularly late stage companies. So I think what we're seeing in sort of corporate America and corporations globally is they're looking for innovation engines. They're looking internally first, but then when they sort of reached the max on what they can do internally, they're looking externally for innovation.
Okay.
And so they're investing and using, you know, capital to support these companies to get a look at what's changing, right? So if you sort of go on the premise that entrepreneurs fundamentally see the opportunity for disruption, then that's what companies are seeking. They're looking for a way to get into that, you know, disruptive engine. Uh-huh. and bring it into their own organization before they too get disrupted, right? So it's kind of this
sure.
idea of,
so you're, you know, you're blocking and tackling, right?
You're more than blocking and tackling. You're fundamentally betting on the ability that another company may disintermediate what you do every day.
Right.
And you better have a stake in that before it actually happened.
That troubles me. Is it because we're late stage VC right now? And because, and to be clear, let me say, okay, if I'm a broadcast media corporation and there is activity happening on the sidelines and I'm not able to build, I need to buy, right? Doesn't that take the oxygen out of the market?
Well, so what's really interesting about the venture capital is you're actually inserting more oxygen into the market, right? Okay. You're continuing to bet on the entrepreneur and you're saying, I want to see what you can do. I want to use my organization to accelerate what you, the entrepreneurial company, are doing. So you're actually sort of accelerating rather than trying to put a limitation on disruption.
But your goal also is to make money for your investors, obviously. And so if a purchase by an institutional VC arm, that would take the oxygen back out.
You know, what's interesting is, so people say, well, corporate venture capital is a prelude to M&A.
Yeah.
And look, mergers and acquisitions happen. That's a great exit for a lot of entrepreneurs.
Sure.
And for their investors. But actually, that's not what the data says. It's not that corporate VCs lead to corporate M&A. It leads to, as I was describing before, the acceleration of that entrepreneurial business. It may get acquired by someone else. It may go public. But in the process, the company has seen and had access to an incredible amount of innovation.
So I'm just trying to pin. I need somebody else in that chair because it's not you. But I need somebody else in that chair to answer that for me, why they want to take out the oxygen. I know it's for survival and EPS. But you had something else on your sheet there you want to talk about?
Yeah. So the other piece, I think, to watch is, so you know, I'm really bullish on the foundations for 2019, but there's a lot of things that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, what's happening from a global trade standpoint, I think, is really, really important. You know, used to be what happens in your home market is all that really mattered to a company. I mean, companies are global from day one today. So getting this right, getting the global trade stuff right, is more than just a front page headline. It's a business lead headline, and it's a CEO imperative in terms of monitoring what's going on and making sure their business aligns to that. So we're watching that very, very closely.
I bet. You know, we mentioned earlier that, you know, EMs are a place for growth this year. You have to think of China market. Does the intellectual property end game that's happening right now between the U.S. and China, is that what you're talking about?
I mean, the intellectual property issues are real. Companies are very careful when they approach, you know, emerging markets in general, China being one of them, mm-hmm. to make sure that they stay in a very strong intellectual property position. You know, what's really interesting, though, in this whole debate is when companies innovate, they kind of stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this idea that, okay, yes, maybe old technology ended up in that emerging market and they got reverse engineered. But what the entrepreneur is trying to do is stay two or three or five steps ahead of that. And I think that that's really notable.
I think it is, too. I'm glad you pulled it out, actually. Real quick, do you watch Billions by chance on Showtime?
I do.
Have you seen that? I just want to play something real quick here.
Don't make me spend time with that guy. VCs are just hedge fund managers who can quote the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Well, he has the pick of the best investments out there.
I need to manage our investments here.
ASCAP goes wherever you do.
Do you know your Buddhism?
Not well enough.
But what did come up in that particular show, and I'm fascinated with it, actually, and it's something this is a very macro anecdotal thing, okay? This is not to do with your research, but venture philanthropy came up in that story arc for that 3 seconds for Mike Birbiglia. What is that? And is that a trend, or is that just a plot point for a show that I like?
You know, I think there's a lot happening in social entrepreneurship that is a sort of a derivative of what you're describing. You know, it's this idea of not only can we make money, but we can do good at the same time.
Right.
And I think, you know, this generation of entrepreneurs actually has that built into their core mission statement. It's in their ethos. I mean, and I think it's really something that's pretty special, you know, recognizing, and I know you've recognized some of those entrepreneurs on your show,
mm-hmm.
and really talking about how they do both. It's a challenge, and I really take my hat off to them.
You know, I was telling some clients at the end of 2018 that 2019 is woke as a business plan. Land on that pad. Thank you so much for coming in. This has been truly enlightening, and I hope to have you back soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's EY's IPO expert, Joe Muscat. He's a 30-year veteran of venture capital investing here in Silicon Valley and around the world. For links to EY's most recent data, research, and reports, there are links in the show notes for the podcast, or you can check online at kgoradio.com. All of our shows, including more venture capital discussions, are just about anywhere you pull down your podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. I'm on Twitter at KGOJason as well. And that's it for this week. Our thanks to EY's Joe Muscat and to you for listening. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.